Today, Australian home price scenarios updated for 2026. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, this post covering finance and property news. This is the first of a series of posts I'm going to make relating to Australian property as we turn into 2026 and look at some of the dynamics and some of the expectations ahead. This is a really important conversation, of course, because for many people, the question of what to do with regard to property, whether you're renting or whether you're proposing to buy or hold property, is a really important question at the moment. So just to set up the sequence, tomorrow I'm going to discuss the issue of mortgage stress and rental stress as households are crushed by the bills because housing costs are looking like they're going to continue to explode in 2026. And then on the 30th, on Tuesday at 8 p.m. Sydney time, there's a live question and answer session with Edwin Almeida and myself. And we're going to discuss there the property trends and take your questions. So these shows will help you contextualize those questions and make that a really productive conversation on Tuesday. But today, I want to start the conversation with looking at the price scenarios. To do that, I want to take you through some of the information which is feeding into my models and also update you with regard to things like housing affordability, home price trends, and other factors too, because this is a complex set of interrelated issues. And as with all of these scenarios, scenarios mean, well, this could happen or that could happen, but it gives you some sensitivities around which to perhaps understand what could happen. To start, let's look here at the data provided in The Australian recently that showed that house price growth over the last 25 years has been, well, frankly. And you can see that Adelaide stands out with a price rise of 570% over the last 25 years. In the year 2000, the price was around 130,000. Now in 2025, 875,000. As Sydney was a mere 465% up from 310,000 in the year 2000 to 1.75 million now. In Melbourne, only 296% higher from 241,000 to 955,000. And you can see there Darwin at the bottom from 197,000 to 645,000. Now, this relates to house price growth over the last 25 years. And looking at the price of units and apartments and other dwellings, you can see that Adelaide again holds the price up 600%. From 95,000 in the year 2000 to 665,000 in 2025. Then Hobart and Perth. Perth up 430% from 114,000 to 609,000. Sydney from 260,000 to 840,000, a mere 223%, which was behind Melbourne at 245%. And Darwin is at the bottom of the pack, and from 152,000 in the year 2000 to 400,000 in 2025. Now, of course, these are averages, and averages mask, as I always say, but it does give you a bit of a sense of momentum in the markets. Hasn't been consistent. If you go back over the trends, you will see there are periods when prices went down, prices went sideways. And in fact, in some parts of the country, I think of North Ryde units in Sydney, for example, prices are still lower than they were in 2018. So you have to be careful with these averages, but nevertheless, it gives you a clear sense of momentum and trajectory. And of course, the main reasons are to do with government policy, interest rates, and property supply and demand, and of course, migration in there as well. Now, when you actually look at this in more detail, as the Cotality and ANU report that came out recently shows, you can see there that comparing value to income, well, nationally, the average is now 8.9 times for houses and 6.7 times for units. But it's most extreme in Sydney at 12.5 times for houses. And you can see there that even in the rest of New South Wales at 9.4 or the rest of Queensland at 8.6, it's pretty extreme. If you were to look at years to save for a deposit, well, it's close to 12 years nationally. In the combined capital regions, it's 12 plus. And in Sydney, it's 16 times. In Melbourne, 11 times. Brisbane, 13 times. Adelaide, 13 times. Perth, 10 times. Hobart, 10 times. Darwin, 6.8 times. And Canberra, 9.5 times. Units, a little bit less. If you then look at the income required to service a new mortgage, that's based on the average income, it's 48% for houses and 36% for units. But it's highest in Sydney at 68 times, the rest of New South Wales at 51 times, Brisbane 52 times, Adelaide 53 times, and Perth 44 times, Hobart 43 times, and Canberra a mere 38 times. For units, it's a little lower, but still extreme, with Sydney sitting at 38 times, Adelaide at 36 times, Brisbane 37 times, and Melbourne at 30 times, Canberra at 22 times. And if you look at the income required to service a rent, well, the typical house rent nationally is 34%, or units 31%. But in Sydney, it's 35%, compared with 31% for a unit. In Melbourne, 29% compared with 26%. In Perth, 34% compared with 31%. This, of course, is really bad news and highlights the fact that it's tougher than ever, whether you're in the rental sector or whether you're thinking of buying property with a mortgage. It's a major problem for many people. And, of course, this strangles household budgets and strangles households' ability to spend. One of the reasons why economic activity is pretty low at the moment. You could say that property is sucking the air out of the economic room. Now, another way of looking at it is the impact on debt-to-income ratios. This is actually a quick summary showing that Australia holds the prize here relative to a number of other countries, including New Zealand, the UK, and the US, and Canada, in terms of the household debt-to-income ratios. Yep, we're borrowing more, and it's costly. And as we'll see later, particularly because interest rates are expected now not to drop further. There's been a lot of recent publishing on this as well, particularly relating to affordability. For example, the Australian Property Update quotes two major reports from the Real Estate Institute of Australia, the REIA, and PropTrack's annual housing affordability report, and there's a pretty consistent picture. Borrowing conditions may have eased slightly thanks to higher incomes and interest rate cuts earlier in the year, but most households are still under severe pressure when it comes to housing. And that's true whether you're looking at housing affordability or rental affordability. On their calculations, you can see here that it's around 55%. As opposed to some of the earlier numbers we saw in New South Wales. And they did say, with the share of median family income required to meet average home loan repayments falling to just 47% in the September quarter. Another way of looking at it here from PropTrack shows that a medium income household could afford around 15% of homes sold nationally in 2025. Which is, of course, a bit of a problem. Or another way of looking at it here, it shows that affordability may have improved slightly, but conditions remain among the worst in the last 20 years. And in fact, in New South Wales, REIA figures show an average household would have to dedicate around 55% of its pre-tax income to mortgage repayments, nearly double the threshold for mortgage stress. On their definition, of course, that's 30% of income, but as we'll see later, that's not the full story. Small improvements driven by income growth and lower interest rates also risk being quickly eroded by rising prices, tight rental markets, and slowing first home buyer activity, leaving affordability stuck at historically difficult levels well into 2026, they say. Another way of looking at it here is the middle income housing affordability measure. And you can see here that across all of the capitals there, it's worse, considerably worse than what it used to be. Or look at median repayments as a share of income. In New South Wales, we're knocking around 40%. That's for a medium-priced home relative to average household income. from PropTrack. Now, of course, the government has intervened, and the 5% home deposit scheme, which was, of course, brought forward, actually, according to some research, could make it harder for low-income earners to buy, according to research quoted in The Guardian. They say the federal government's 5% home deposit scheme will make it more difficult for low-income Australians to buy their first home. That's according to new research that suggests a major rethink of key housing affordability policies is needed. And they go on to say the expansion of the measure in October coincided with a sharp acceleration in home values and raised concerns that policy could prove self-defeating. Whilst the Treasury says, oh, very small rises, in fact, the modelling quoted here found that the reduced deposit policy could leave home prices 10 to 20% higher over the coming decade. And by the way, it's not equally spread across all prospective purchasers. Higher income households can buy earlier, say by 10 months. Middle income households can buy a year earlier under the super plan, while the reduced deposit scheme will have a more immediate price shock, and that will make higher repayments bite. And they conclude that this actually is a set of policies that's pushing in the wrong direction. Now, we should also turn to look at the other issue, demand. And one of the critical issues here is, of course, population growth. And you can see, according to the latest data, the population growth in Australia is rising by 1.5%, compared with 0.6% year over year. So we have a lot of people coming into the country looking for somewhere to live. And as this data reported via Harriet Brooker, an avid commentator, shows, the net permanent and long-term arrivals to October were up, and the net long-term and permanent arrivals versus the working age population also shows a rise in arrivals stronger than the working age population growth. So we've got a lot of students and other people coming into the country. Or another way of looking at it, if you look at overseas arrivals and departures, you can see here that we had 305,500 people coming in annually rolling, with more people coming, 568,000, than going, 262,000. And interestingly, if you look at it by state, you can see there that there was a considerable rise in pretty much every state, with Victoria and New South Wales. But it is worth noting that the net interstate migration was negative in New South Wales and positive into Queensland. WA, of course, is also booming. And the question is, well, where are all these people going to live? Which takes us nicely to this little cartoon from Shakespeare. They've got to live somewhere. Yeah, let's build more high-rise and more high-rise and more high-rise. But of course, we don't want to propose housing development near us, which takes us into the NIMBY conversation and the government policies, particularly at state level, trying to impose high-rise development on people that perhaps don't really want it. Which takes us then also to another question, which is fed into my model, which is consumer confidence. How confident are people thinking about their incomes or about the prospect of their housing and all those things? That's a critical thing, because whilst some of the other data is very powerful and direct, even if some of the ABS stats are a bit muffed, the consumer confidence information is a bit more wobbly, as we will see. But nevertheless, it is quite important to look at it. This is the latest from the Melbourne Institute and Westpac Banking, and shows that consumer confidence has actually slid to 94.5. And there, 100 is moving into optimistic territory, below pessimistic territory. And you can see there that in recent times, well, we are quite pessimistic. Now, if you actually dive into household incomes at the lower end, this is 20 to 40,000. You can see the sentiment is actually very, very weak, down to 63.5. I'm seeing that in my surveys too. A lot of people on smaller incomes are really being crushed at the moment. You can also cut the data looking at mortgage type. Owners, a little bit more positive, although dropping back because of the perspective now of rate rises ahead. But those in the rental sector and those with a mortgage are actually deeply negative. And in fact, if you look at it, has dropped dramatically very recently because of the change of sentiment. And that's important. And that's one of the reasons why our scenarios are going to change ahead. Also, is it a good time to buy a dwelling? No. Well, according to this data, again, same sourced, 86.2 is the score. That's well below the period average of 115. So a lot of people are thinking that it may not be a good time to buy at the moment. Now, of course, there are reasons to buy whenever. You know, if you have to move with a job or you're moving into housing formation and you need to get somewhere to live, then you've perhaps got no choice. But for many people, there is a choice. Do I move? Do I not move? Do I buy? Do I not buy? If I'm in rental accommodation, do I move into a property purchase? So all of those factors are in play at the moment. And that, of course, translates then into a relative difference in terms of prospective demand for property. The next thing we need to look at is the trajectory of interest rates. And of course, there's been a sharp turnaround. The RBA in its recent minutes highlighted that maybe the RBA is now of the view that rates are no longer restrictive and the next move could well be up. And in fact, the markets are now looking at an implied yield curve rising from this point. And you can see there by March 27, we are looking at, well, somewhere around 3.8%, and it's pretty much staying there through May 27. That, of course, suggests rate expectations rising, or this one slightly earlier shows above 4%. This is the RBA cash rate and futures pricing. So the chances are we're going to see rate rises ahead, not rate falls. And interestingly, Bloomberg reported recently that money market pricing suggests a 50-50 chance of a rate hike late next year. Economists are split. Most still expect one more cut, but perhaps that's gone away now. Several see the RBA staying on hold. Others anticipate the next move will be a hike. And so in my scenarios, I have to take that on board now. Market speculation that rates have bottomed out may act as a dampener on buying demand, said Shane Oliver, chief economist at AMP. That will leave mortgage rates at well above record lows seen in 2021, constraining buying capacity and limiting the upside in prices. And Catalyst's Tim Lawless also expects price gains to slow in 2026, with housing affordability already stretched and worsening. It stands to reason that fewer borrowers will be able to access credit as serviceability barriers become more prominent. Now, of course, the reference there relates to APRA coming in and saying they're going to actually tighten some of the lending conditions, especially for investment properties, that will come in 2026. So we are at a turning point, an inflection point, I think, in property at the moment. And it's true, I think, that a lot of people have not yet understood just how significantly different now conditions are compared with where they were. Now, that said, credit has been very strong. This is the data recently produced by the RBA and showing that housing credit has been rising very significantly. One of the reasons why they're now talking about bringing in more constraints. And already we are seeing some banks lift rates. This is the Westpac data, and they're showing here that the comparison rates for fixed owner-occupied home loans are actually rising. One of the reasons, of course, as I've mentioned several times, is the government is spending way too much relative to revenue, and that is definitely putting upward pressure on inflation and making the RBA think about raising rates rather than cutting rates. One of the other factors, of course, to think about here is the supply. What is the supply of property? Well, we spoke about migration, strong demand, of course. A lot of people in home formation now want single occupancy properties as well. That's another factor there as well. And we've also got some down traders who are living in big properties, would buy a smaller property if they could find it, but they can't find the right type of property in the right type of place. So all of those reasons suggest that demand might actually be falling. But of course, the other question is, well, what are we building? And the latest data shows that the dwelling completions are pretty low. If you look at the dwelling completions per 1,000 people, you can see that it's, well, pretty much as low as it's ever been. And that's with a cash rate at 3.6%. That's already had an impact on the auction clearance rates. This from AMP, showing that in fact we've had a bit of a decline, and I think we're going to see the clearances a little bit weaker ahead. Interesting to see what the autumn selling season turns into. That'll be something we'll discuss with Edwin on Tuesday. The other factor I want to highlight is that, again, the rental sector is where a lot of the pressures are really strong. We're seeing very strong rises in rents at the moment after a little bit of a weakening, perhaps, of growth. That's now turned around. And in fact, there was a recent article published by the ABC that showed that the required annual income in 2025 to rent a house and not be in financial stress. Again, that's based on the 30% rule, which is a flimsy rule at best. You can see here that in Sydney, it's over 135,000. In Melbourne, it's 100,000. But in Perth, it's 121,000. In Darwin, 124,000. Even Adelaide, 107,000. And the final question to begin to work on my scenarios is, what's going to happen to unemployment? Now, there is an expectation that unemployment will rise, but slightly. We've still got rather full employment, and in fact, the RBA has continued to say that the rising unemployment is likely to be relatively benign because of the lack of supply of workers relative to the demand for workers. So they continue to talk about tight labour markets. And you can see there that the November Statement of Monetary Policy in the RBA forecast is now forecasting the unemployment to rise to 4.4% compared with 4.32%. That's a small move up, but actually isn't that significant. So when I take all this information and think about how to model it, I put it all into the core market model. Of course, the core market model being my critical tool that I use for all my scenario analysis. This is the model. So we use information from our consumer surveys, information from other sources, and we put it all into the model. And that allows us then to form some views as to what may happen ahead. Obviously, we can slice and dice the data lots of different ways, as we do, but we can also form a view of where things may go ahead through our scenarios. And our scenarios allows us to look at all of these different dimensions, things like mortgage stress, the price trajectory and history information, the buying and selling intentions, the migration, the economic data, the CPI, the wages employment, all into the core market model through our scenarios. And then at a postcode level, region, state and all Australia level, we can form some views about where prices may go. Now, I will just remind you that we do provide a one-to-one service. If you're interested in a conversation about a particular suburb or postcode, we can do that. It's an individual conversation. It's not financial advice, but I can look at the data in my models. We go down to a postcode level and a suburb level, and we can look at the underlying trends. And therefore, we can look at the home price trend data and the price trends and scenarios ahead based on the modeling. And these conversations take about an hour by Zoom or by phone. There is a charge involved simply because there's a lot of work, about 6 or 7 hours of my time. And I also make a few phone calls and talk to some of the people on the ground in the particular area as well as part of that exercise. And if you are interested, you can contact me by the blog. Links are below. We're booking 3 to 5 weeks ahead at the moment. We've got quite a few people in the pipeline. But if you are interested, feel free to contact me. So that takes us nicely on then to talk about our scenarios. Now, when we talk about scenarios, it's very important to understand what we're talking about here. The scenarios are effectively a way of thinking about the future and looking at the consequences of different scenarios playing out. It really is to facilitate an understanding and debate and relative sensitivities. None of these scenarios will be right. They will vary, of course, things change. But we do use a framework driven from our core market model, and we look at generally three potential outcomes updated with the latest data and results from the surveys, and the scenarios run from today for 3 years. So we have three scenarios: the best or the Goldilocks zone now assumes that rates will stay at 3.6% until the middle of 2026, but then ease. Inflation stays above the target until later 2026. Migration remains above average. We continue to see a lot of first-time buyers buying, and we don't get a local recession in Australia. Our second, our base case, which we call the soft landing scenario, is that we see rates on hold at 3.6% until inflation eases in line with RBA expectations in 2027. We do see wages rising faster than inflation initially, but we then end up with a recession in Australia and we see migration falling to around average. The third scenario is a nightmare scenario, the worst case scenario. We see rates rising from 3.6% in early 2026 as inflation steps up, but unemployment rises and wages growth stalls. Later, we do see some rate cuts, migration drops below average, and we enter effectively a period of stagflation. Stagflation meaning that interest rates are relatively high, but there's no growth. And that can, of course, go on for a long period of time. So those are our three scenarios, the best, the base, and the worst. What we can then do is look at the overall story for Australia, and we could look at it both in terms of houses and units. Of course, this is an aggregate, but what we see for the best case scenario is a rise of 10% over the next 3 years, with smaller rises in the first 12 months. But the base case is now a fall of around 4.7% over 3 years, and the worst case, a fall of 25% over 3 years. Units tend to follow on in a rather similar fashion, although perhaps a little less of a fall. We can look at the individual states, look at the ACT first, and there we see the best case scenario of a 3.6% rise over the next 3 years for houses. The base case is a fall of 12%. The worst case scenario is a fall of 32%. And units are following on somewhat similarly. If we look at New South Wales, here we see a best case scenario of a rise of 8.4% over 3 years, but 1.4% only over the next 12 months. The base case is a fall of 7% over 3 years. The worst case, a fall of 27% over 3 years. And units following on in a somewhat similar fashion. If we look at the Northern Territory, here there is still a scenario for very strong rises simply because of the lack of supply and strong demand. But the base case is only a small rise, 4.3% over 3 years, and the worst case, a fall of 16%, and units following on relatively similarly. In Queensland, the best case is a rise of 14% over 3 years, driven by strong demand, including games related. The base case is a fall of 1.4% over 3 years, and the worst case, a fall of 21% over 3 years, and units following along. In South Australia, still strong growth, up 17% over 3 years in the best case scenario, but the base case is pretty much flat at 1.4% over 3 years, and the worst case down 90% over 3 years, and units again following along. In Tasmania, we only see a very small rise in the best case, up 2.1% over 3 years, but the base case is a fall of 13.5% over 3 years, and the worst case a fall of 33.9% over 3 years, and units again following on similar pattern, but with a smaller fall. Now we look at Victoria with a rise of 7.6% best case over 3 years, but over the 12 months ahead, only a rise of 0.9%. However, the base case is a fall of 8% over 3 years and 3.6% down over the next 12 months. The worst case, a fall of 8.9% or down 28% over 3 years and units following along pretty closely. In Western Australia, we look for a 14.6% rise best case scenario over 3 years. The base case pretty much flat, actually falling 1.1% over 3 years, and the worst case down 21.4% over 3 years, and units again following on pretty closely. So that gives you a bit of a flavor of the sensitivities. Now, of course, depending on your scenario, any one of those could play out, or any combination of those could play out, and it could play out differently in different locations as well. Melbourne looks particularly prone to recession at the moment, given the policies there and the high levels of public debt in Victoria. Whereas perhaps in Queensland, there's more momentum on the upside, driven perhaps by the Games. And in Western Australia, the strong migration is probably sufficient to continue momentum. But if China reduces demand for our minerals, well, that could all change. Now, of course, I do have granular information down to a postcode level. And as always, this is a bit of a summary of what we can produce. This is actually the Wollongong postcode, one I know very well, of course. And you can see that we can get into the disposable monthly income to support a mortgage at 41% or renting 33%. We've got a little bit of a mix of property types. It's mostly houses plus units, 52% of units. We can also look at things like the vacancy rates and also the gross investment yield and net investment yield and the scenarios ahead at the postcode level. So if you're interested in having specific discussions about a particular postcode, that's one way of going about it. In fact, that data is available for every postcode that we analyze, more than 2,000, and it's available via our Patreon program. Links are below if you want to sign up for that. You can get the full sheet with all the information for all the postcodes. So as I come to the end of this show, it's worth just highlighting, I think, that the conversation ahead will be tomorrow, where we talk about specifically the mortgage stress and the rental stress and how households are being crushed by bills. I'm afraid we're going to see more of that in 2026. And then, as I mentioned earlier on Tuesday, 8 p.m. Sydney time, there'll be a live Q&A with Edwin and myself, where we're going to talk further about our property trends and what could be driving them. And of course, you can ask questions live with Edwin and myself. So make a diary note for that on Tuesday at 8 p.m. Sydney, and feel free to join us. Or if you want to put a question in the chat now, here, I'll pick it up and we can feed it into the show on Tuesday. So the bottom line is this. We are, I think, at an important inflection point in the property market. Whilst, of course, the Spruikers will be talking about all of the positive signs, high migration, low supply, all of those things. The fact is that households are up to their eyeballs in debt, that those in the rental sector are actually under the gun at the moment, and we do expect some rental rises over the next few months as well, but we don't expect a rate cut from this point. We think the most likely direction for rates from now on is up. It'll be a question of how much. And this, of course, has significant broader ramifications for the economy that's still struggling significantly, despite the MIEFA report from Chalmers, who managed to give it an interesting spin. For many households, they are up against it. And it looks to me as though 2026 will be a continuation of that story, but we'll touch that some more tomorrow. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.